verifying you.
Welcome. The noon hour is here, and it's time to talk about the teams you love with the guys you know and trust.
Yeah, that's right. We are the best.
This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome in, 1280 The Zone, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. It is the Hans and Scotty Show here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Holy cow, we've got a busy day for you today. And Utah State getting another win. Scotty G will be on the show with us pretty quickly. I would imagine we'll get Scotty here in the next 15, 20 minutes, so hang tight with that. Scotty's doing a little bit of a post-game on the AM side of things, and then he'll join us, and we'll start kind of the normal Hans and Scotty show moving forward through a Friday. It is a Friday. Congratulations, you made it. The weekend is right in front of you. Let's just get you through the rest of this work day, and we'll get you into a fun weekend filled with sports. And Lloyd, I don't know if I'm a little bit manic depressant. I don't know if I've got a bit of bipolar disorder, but I go through these like waves of real joy, and then real sadness. I was listening to the promo coming in, and it said, get your tickets to the final Utah State home game. And my whole countenance just dropped, like fell off the face of the earth. You realize
the season is about over.
Utah has only got two home games left. Now, Utah is the only team in the state that has two home games left. It's this week against Oregon, next week against Colorado, but this is Utah State's final home game. BYU doesn't have any more home games. They don't get to play in Lavelle Edwards Stadium anymore this year. And I'm sick to death about it. How did, where, what, when?
Oh, man, you know, every year the football season goes by so, it just it flies.
I know.
It does.
I know.
It flies. Especially when the teams, all the teams in the state are pretty good.
That's why we've got to stop time right now, and we've got to take full advantage of this Utah-Oregon game. Because we don't get games like this in this state very often. This is why I'm excited about BYU going into the Big 12. Because they might get to play a game like this coming up sometime in 2023 or beyond. I'm talking about conference implications. I'm talking about having a ranked opponent. I'm talking about a late November game with absolute meaning where networks want to put you on their stations and not on ESPN Plus. Lloyd, what is ESPN Plus? Is that an app? Is that like ESPN 3?
I think you get it when you like sign up for like the Disney Plus package now. Or they have a package that comes with like Hulu, Disney Plus, and I think you get ESPN Plus.
So
and I don't exactly know exactly.
ESPN Plus is not on any. It's not on
my
cable.
My guess is you do not have ESPN Plus, would be my guess.
Well, what would I have it for? I do have the Disney Channel. I pay $10 a month. That's me.
Yeah, but you probably don't have the package anymore. You probably don't have the, because we started off with a package with that gives us Disney Plus, it gives us ESPN Plus and Hulu.
Oh, okay. So you've got ESPN Plus.
I think right now I do.
So what,
sort of.
What are you doing tomorrow around 1?
I am actually going to be here. I'm actually hanging out with you and Hatch.
Oh, you're going to be on air?
Well, no.
Yeah, me, you, and Hatch.
Well, I'll be kicking things around. I'll be, getting the highlights and stuff like that.
Does that bring back bad memories for you?
I don't want to talk about it.
Sunday?
No, don't do that. I hate
Chiefs
Travis
Raiders
Kelce, by
replays.
The way.
Do you really?
I dislike him. Yeah.
You're one of the few people I've ever known that doesn't somewhat at
really
least respect
actually.
Him.
You know what really has sent me off about him? Like, I think they were getting smoked like just a couple weeks ago, and he got like a first down or something, and he started dancing or something like that. I'm like, you guys are losing by 30. What are you doing? Don't be dancing when you're losing by 30.
Okay.
Doing your little first down dance. Oh, Oh, yeah.
I can kind of get on board with you.
Like, come on. You're going to do that and you're down by 20?
When you're down by double digits, just drop the ball, move forward. That's just, yeah. Just shut your mouth, drop the ball, move forward. The scoreboard is the ultimate trash talk.
Absolutely.
And if you can't have a scoreboard confirm your actions, then just drop the ball, walk away. I mean, that's all you need to do.
He has more yards than anybody, any other receiver, I think, against one team. Like, mm-hmm. he almost has 1,000 yards mm-hmm. against the Raiders.
That's awesome.
Like, he dominates.
Well,
but it just bugs me, whatever.
Well, college football is starting to come to a close. NFL, we still got plenty of that to go. I did get my bowl game assignments for the national broadcast, so I'm pretty excited about that. National broadcast assignment, Lloyd, you ready for these? I will be calling the Vegas Bowl. I will be calling the Outback Bowl. And it is confirmed, I will be the color analyst in Shreveport, Louisiana for the Independence Bowl.
What?
Yeah. I'm going to be on the national broadcast for the Independence Bowl.
How many broadcasts are you doing?
3 this year.
Good Lord.
Vegas, Outback, and the Independence Bowl. So pretty excited about that. I know first option would be Utah in the Rose Bowl. It would be nice to see Utah in the Rose Bowl. I wouldn't mind calling them in the Vegas Bowl. That is a Pac-12 team. I wouldn't mind getting Utah in the Vegas Bowl. I told you that, Lloyd. I would like to see them in the Rose Bowl. First and foremost, but the selfish side of me.
Why are you shaking your head right now?
I'd love to call that game.
Why are you shaking your head? You don't want them in the Rose Bowl, do you? Are you shaking your head right now?
Yeah, but the Vegas Bowl has become much more prestigious.
Normally, you're on a remote, and I just hear the shaking.
No, I'm not shaking my head.
But now I get to actually physically see you shaking your head. You want them in? You don't even want them in the Rose Bowl.
I want them in the Rose Bowl. I want them in the Rose Bowl. If they're not in the Rose Bowl, get them in the Vegas Bowl so I can call the game.
What you're doing right now, you're being selfish.
Oh,
you're being really selfish.
I do hope that BYU, and it would be nice to see BYU get a better bowl game, but it's going to be University of Texas San Antonio, UTSA. Should be 12-0 UTSA versus BYU in that Independence Bowl. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that, because if I go all the way to Shreveport for the national broadcast on this thing, and I don't have BYU in that game, that's not going to be as fun for me. I would be.
Oh, you'll have fun.
Pretty bummed. But we do have the bowl season right upon us, and we'll have some good bowl games. But, Lloyd, this Utah-Oregon game is absolutely huge. I'm excited about it. We've got all your pre- and post-game coverage that'll be starting tomorrow for both the BYU and Utah games. I'll be on both of those pre- and post-game coverages. We've got Jazz game, pre-half and post, that we've got tomorrow. So a really big weekend coming up for you tomorrow. But, Lloyd, really quick before we jump to the starter, I've got an update for a Utah high school state finals game. Update. I think it's still 14-6 Lehigh over Springville.
Okay.
Lehigh with a 14-6 lead over Springville. I think two teams.
Wait, you need to. It's Lehigh at 50. What are you doing right now?
Is it
12? No. It's Lehigh snow at 35. It's Snow College
at the nines.
At the 53s.
No, Snow College at the nines, Lehigh's at the 11s.
Okay.
No, but there is a good high school game going on for a state championship up there at Rice-Eccles Stadium, and it looks like Lehigh is leading Springville 14-6. That's the last update I got on that. We'll keep you updated on that. We're going to get Scotty G on the broadcast here in just a minute, but Lloyd, I wanted to jump into this Jazz game last night. Let's get into it. It's your starter.
This is Hans and Scotty G.
Let's go!
And now it's time to kick off the show with the biggest topic of the day. This is the starting lineup. Starting lineup on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Royce will fake the ball pass, fire the three, and hit.
And Royce O'Neal's leading the Jazz in scoring tonight with 16 points on 6 of 7 shooting, 4 of 5 from 3. Beautiful lob by Ingles to Gobert for the dunk, all set up by a Rudy Gay pass to start it. And a slam dunk, and the Jazz are back up by 7. Clarkson holds, now drives with the right hand, finds Ingles, open 3 for Joe. Come on, kid. Yes, sir! Joe Ingles for 3. Utah by 10. Jazz have got Vivid Arena cheering. Chested to Gay. Deep 3 from Rudy Gay is good. Oh, my goodness! Rudy Gay's making everybody happy.
So, Lloyd, last night, Rudy Gay goes off in this game, 5 of 6 from 3, ties his career best from the perimeter, and ends up with 20 points. Rudy Gay, in this Jazz system, on that court last night, looked as natural and as fluid as a baby duck stepping into water to follow his mama across the pond.
I kind of wish he would have went like 3 of 6.
To leave you a little bit of room?
Just be like, okay, not bad. He's a little rusty. But to come out and just fire like that, it's like, okay. So now, yeah, even he said on his walk-off, he says, don't expect that from me every night, guys.
I know. That was the first thing he said as he's coming off the court. He said, hey, don't expect that. This isn't going to happen anymore. Like, you're kind of right. Like, leave yourself some room to grow. You left yourself 1-3 that you could make. And be like, oh, see, I told you he could get better. He went 6-6, see?
He looked so good.
He did look really good. And it was not just about the 5-6. It wasn't just about the 20 points. There were other things. His movement, his transition, his length. Everything looked so good. It was such a beautiful fit. You know, we always talk about, oh, the spacing on the court. You hear spacing on the court. You hear it all the time. You want to get a better understanding of what spacing on the court means and looks like, watch Rudy Gay. Watch what he does to an opposing team. Watch the hand that he forces them to play. And then watch Rudy Gobert finish at the rim. Then watch the pick and roll engage. Watch so many other areas start to flow. Rudy Gay opens up so many different things offensively. And then it wasn't just about that either, Lloyd. Did you see some of his defensive rotation and movement? Like, the way he would get out and actually close and contest a shot, the way he would pinch down in help defense and make it really uncomfortable. Can he play this good? No, he can't play 5-6 from 3 good. He could play 20-point good, even though I think 20-point good, I think he's a 16-point average. I think 20-point good is a little bit lofty. What I'd like
to
see
is... No, but he's
going to
be good in a lot of areas.
I know. But okay, so that's the question that this game left me with last night. And I know Toronto is securely on that struggle bus. We talked about it yesterday. I think they'd lost 4 in a row or 5 in a row. This would be 5 or 6 in a row. Toronto has been struggling, even though I think that they've got some good players on that roster. And they started out the season good. They've been struggling. And last night, it made me think, okay, so is this Rudy Gay being a product of Quinn Snyder's system? Think about the fits. Think about all the different fits that we've seen through the NBA in whatever, the 15 years that I've been on air actually watching the NBA. There's guys that will shift to a different organization inside a different system, and it's the perfect fit. By the way, that's not just relative to basketball. That's all sports. That's a broad set for all sports. You know, one of the biggest sayings for the NFL is timing and fit. Oh, he's just a walk-on. He doesn't have a chance. Timing and fit. Does he fit the system? Is his timing right? We got Kyle Van Noy. He's part of the Good, Bad, and Ugly coming up here a little bit later in the show. You watch Kyle Van Noy goes from Detroit, where it looked like he was starting to flame out a bit, and then he goes to New England, goes and wins a Super Bowl or two, and looks like a Pro Bowl linebacker. It's the timing and the fit of a player. And watching Rudy Gay last night in Quinn Snyder's system, with so many different other working parts on the court with him, offensively so many other weapons, it left him room and opportunity. Now, what's crazy is you watch some of the room he took advantage of. He took a really deep three. He took a catch-and-shoot corner. He took some shots last night that it showed some versatility in shooting from the perimeter. But again, it's going to force spacing. I like the start because now, you know, as you get a little bit more into the season and you start rolling into, like, Sacramento coming up tomorrow, well, now Sacramento's got a whole other bag of M&Ms that they got to worry about. Rudy Gay is awesome. One of the better parts about this, Lloyd, we already know what kind of locker room guy he is. Eric Pascoe mentioned Rudy Gay in the locker room, didn't he? Was it Eric Pascoe when we had him on?
I believe he did. Donovan mentioned his leadership in a practice, I think.
Okay,
availability.
This is as he's still rehabbing that heel, getting back on the court for the Jazz. This might feel like to people like, Hans, what kind of talking point is this? Well, of course, they're going to mention he's a good leader. Look, unprovoked. I want to say that Eric Pascoe mentioned it unprovoked. When I asked him about some of the leaders on the court when we had him on, did he not mention Rudy Gay? Same with Donovan Mitchell. These guys have mentioned what Rudy means in that locker room. He's a calming presence. 16 years he's been in this league. He knows about everything. He's been in this league as long as I've been on air. That's shocking. He has been in this league as long as I have been doing sports radio in the state of Utah, which to people that can't stand me, that's a long time.
Okay, you know what? You know what he reminds me of? And maybe he's more of a leader. I don't know. He reminds me of, you remember our guy ISO Joe when he was here?
Yeah, sure.
Reminds me of his
Joe
time.
Jesus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reminds me of his time.
Oh.
You remember how good of a shooter he was?
I remember that it felt like he was more responsible for himself, and sometimes
he's ISO Joe for a reason.
Yeah, he would go outside of he was more.
But he was a good presence with the team, though.
He felt like a bigger Jordan Clarkson at times. Like,
oh, I don't know about that.
I like Joe a lot, but I know exactly what you're talking about. But it was really nice to see Rudy Gay in his in his debut. See, I struggle with the same thing Scotty does. That's a tough one. So, fantastic win last night against Toronto. I think that's a good win against Toronto, 119-103. Rudy Gay also gave you 5 rebounds, and he was only on the court for 18 minutes in those 20 points. So, fantastic. Oh, and by the way, Lloyd, applauding you and Scotty.
They're climbing a little bit. But though, at one point, I think they were at 35% when they – I think the shooting had gone down just a little bit. They started off like hot, and then it cooled down just a little bit, but then they picked it up.
41.3% from the perimeter last night. In large part due to Rudy Gay and his 5 of 6. Which, you know, I just hope he continues to put work in, Lloyd. Just, you know, until he hits that 6 of 6, can we really crown him? Until he shows improvement.
Hey, you know who did hit who had a perfect game from three? Our guy George Niang.
Oh,
he went 7 for 7.
I know. Gorgeous, gorgeous.
Can expect him to go 6 for 6. I don't think that's asking too much.
Bless that sweet minivan, Georges.
Of all the people, George Niang goes 7 for 7.
Yeah, well, he deserves it. I hope he lasts in the league for 15 years. I hope he's Rudy Gay 2.0. I hope he can make it in the league off that shot for a long time because nobody's got a better heart. I'm telling you, nobody's got a better heart. It's so fun just to sit down and shoot the breeze with him. Genuine guy. And I think Jazz fans wish nothing but the best for George Niang. Don't you think?
Yeah.
They love him.
Yeah. No, he was a good. He was a good part of the.
It wasn't a
Jets.
Standing ovation when he took to the court. As Philly came in here to Vivint Arena a couple nights ago,
it was a nice
applause.
Sure, he struggled in the postseason, but he was a big part of their regular season success.
Yeah, he was. So Utah Jazz 41.3% against the Raptors. So since making the bet, and it is a very hefty bet, since making a bet that the Utah Jazz could get themselves over 35.5% from three through the next eight games, we're two games in, Lloyd. They have shot 42.1% and 41.3% collectively as a team, well over their 38.9% from three, that mark that they set for the 2020 season. So the Utah Jazz are on their way.
Starting to find it.
On their way to boosting that perimeter shooting percent. Excited to talk with our next guest. He is the Oregon Ducks play-by-play man. Been covering the Ducks closer than anybody. Jerry Allen joins us next to get you ready for this Utah-Oregon game. Got a few working parts that we are dealing with here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scotty G, who just got done with his Utah State basketball broadcast, is going to join us live here in just a minute. But in the meantime, we're excited to jump into this interview with Oregon Ducks play-by-play man Jerry Allen. Jerry, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Hans. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to be able to catch up with you. I got to imagine that you're pumped for this game as well.
Boy, this is the game of the year right now. I mean, everyone gets bigger as the year goes on when you get closer to your goals, but this is the one. I mean, this is the one that probably will determine how each of these teams do in their respective North and South divisions.
Well, it's exciting. I've gone through, I've been watching the film on this Ducks team, and I think that there's a lot of great working parts, and I know that we could start with the quarterback. I know we could start with the running backs, and we could even get into the defense, but I want to start with your offensive line, man. You've got a good center that's playing right up front for this Ducks team, and it feels like this is a pretty solid offensive line. How much of this team is reliant upon their production?
Well, at everything. I mean, particularly the running game. Alex Forsythe was the force that started. He's the veteran, and he's just really the quarterback of the team at that center position. And then Oregon started going through some injuries in the offensive line. A guy started moving around. Forsythe went out for a few games. And Ryan Walk is just like a Swiss Army tool, can play any position on that line. He comes back in and goes to center, and the team doesn't miss a beat. There's been Dawson Jaramillo is another guy that stepped up when Stephen Jones or George Moore has gone done. So Oregon's had, I'll bet you, a dozen or more different combinations of starting offensive lines or guys who played significant minutes in the offensive lines because of injuries, and that they've continued to play well is a credit to the center, Alex Forsythe, and then Ryan Walk, who will not be there this week.
Well, I thought that Forsythe was fantastic last week. I mean, he stood out on film multiple times, broke a couple of big runs for Brown there in the first half of that game, and just spectacular. That's why I wanted to bring it up with you, because it jumped out to me. The other thing that really jumped out to me last week in that game against Washington State was a guy that seems like he continues to get more and more healthy. Kayvon Thibodeau was a real problem in the backfield for Washington State. Talk about some of the issues that he brings on that defensive line when he's facing those opposing offenses.
Well, he's a very smart, very heady player. He understands positions, angles. He understands what's going on with the play. And before that play starts, he has an idea where he wants to go and how he's going to get there. And then he's just athletic. I mean, he's just unbelievably athletic. He's 6'5". He's a big guy, about 260 pounds. But he moves like a smaller guy, so quick and powerful. And if you really watch a lot of games, he's held half the time. I mean, they just have to hold him. Now, he's helped. It's kind of a bookend deal. Brandon Dorlus is the other side of that defensive rush. So Thibodeau and Dorlus kind of play off of each other. But Kayvon Thibodeau is just different. He just has the ability to almost get around while almost lying down on the ground using his arm to skirt around guys and then get up and get on that quarterback. He's been fun to watch. He's different.
So he's a real joy to watch. Another real joy to watch is Noah Sewell. And it just feels like anything that Kayvon kicks out of the backfield, Noah Sewell ends up chasing down and dragging down like a lion on the back of a gazelle. He's impressively fast, very strong, sure-handed tackler. But he does a great job at times in pass pro. I want you to talk a little bit about what Noah Sewell brings defensively.
Noah Sewell brings an attitude. I mean, he's just he's got to be very much like his brother Nephi. I mean, they both are cut from the same cloth. Intense, powerful, fast, intelligent, and can play all over the field. And I think we look at Thibodeau and we look at Sewell, and I think the same thing is probably true for the Utes, and that is there are complementary guys around them that allow them to do what they do. Keon Ware-Hudson, a defensive tackle. Jeffrey Bossa has stepped up. Nate Kehaulani, another linebacker. And Mace Funa, who's been down and back. And then the back end of Oregon's secondary, you know, they all complement each other. So Sewell and Thibodeau are able to make the plays they make because they know they've got support around them. And I think Utah does the same thing. I look at what Devin Lloyd does, and he's just a destroyer. But he knows he's got Nephi Sewell beside him, Tafua on the outside, and then Fillinger on the other side. But they support each other. So, but Noah Sewell, he's another guy that, you know, just makes things happen.
As I was doing some research getting ready for this game, Jerry, I came across the 14 interceptions that Oregon's put together. I haven't been able to go through every one of their games, just a couple, but talk to me more specifically about where those 14 interceptions are coming from and what Oregon is doing in coverages to be able to ball hawk like that.
Well, Rome McKinley, the third, who is the free safety, he's the kind of the quarterback of the defense. He gets everybody in positions. He makes the calls along with Sewell and making the defensive line calls. So they kind of really help each other. And then assisted intelligence. I think Oregon's coaching staff does a tremendous job with a scout team of showing these guys what they're going to see each week. So Rome McKinley, the third, who – you know, he's outspoken, not brash, just honest about how he thinks this team should be respected, and they want to go earn that respect, and they've been able to do that. Mikhail Wright, teams don't throw at him a whole lot. He doesn't get targeted because he's just so good. I think if there's any, weakness on this team, it would be if there's an injury and somebody goes down. The Ducks have lost a couple of guys in that back end, and so a redshirt freshman, Triquez Bridges, has had to step into that spot. Dante Manning, a freshman, has had to step up. So they've been able to fill some of those voids, but the key's Verone McKinley III. He's the guy that makes it happen in that secondary.
We're speaking with the great Jerry Allen, play-by-play voice of the Oregon Ducks. He's done a fantastic job. And Jerry, I know that you've been around for a lot of years. You've seen a lot of really good college football teams. You've seen now that Oregon is placed number 3 in that college football playoff ranking. Do you believe, in what you've seen from this Oregon team, do you believe that this is a college football playoff caliber team, a team that could truly compete in that tournament?
Yeah, I definitely do. And one of the biggest reasons I believe that they belong there and that they can compete is because the college football landscape is different this year than it has been in a while. I mean, I think the transfer portal – I think the number of injuries teams have dealt with, and then the COVID, following the COVID year, with some of the guys getting to come back and play again, has really changed teams. And so, you know, I mean, besides, other than Georgia, I mean, Alabama, yeah, they're pretty good. Ohio State's pretty good. Oregon's pretty good. Cincinnati, you know, pretty good. There are a bunch of teams that are pretty good up at the top, one that's really, really good in Georgia. So, yeah, Oregon's in that mix. But I think it has a lot to do with the transfer portal, with guys coming back from COVID. And the college football landscape doesn't have all those big guns up there at the top that nobody could get close to.
It's going to be a tough finish for them. Utah possibly twice, finishing out here at Rice-Eccles Stadium and then potentially seeing them in the Pac-12 championship game. I think that this is going to be a very difficult matchup for them. Jerry, you've seen these games here at Rice-Eccles Stadium, and you've seen these tough Utah teams at times. How well do you feel Utah matches up against Oregon?
Well, it's almost, you know, like one of Oregon's players, it might have been Ron McKinley, said it's like looking in the mirror. These guys are big, they're strong, they're fast, and a lot of the numbers are very close. Rushing, passing, total yards, third down conversions. I mean, when you look at what these teams have done throughout the conference so far, there's not a lot that separates them. The big thing that I think that Utah has is Cameron Rising, and he's got three or four receivers that he can go to any one of them. Something Oregon hasn't done is get that one or two guys that are up around, you know, 20, 30, 40 receptions. It's been, you know, spread the ball around a lot. So it's a little unnerving going into Rice-Eccles, because Rice-Eccles for visitors is like Autzen Stadium is for visitors. It's a tough place to play.
Very tough place, and I think it's going to be one of the toughest games for Anthony Brown. And in the two games that I've really looked at, Jerry, I've looked at both Washington and Washington State, the last two games that Oregon's played, it feels like 80%, maybe even 90% between passing and rushing really runs through Anthony. I felt like Travis Dye was spectacular against Washington, but most things run through Anthony Brown, whether it's zone read, whether it's dishing it to the flats, whatever he does, it feels like he's the most important piece of that offense. Talk about Anthony Brown's best attributes as a quarterback. What are two or three things that separates him as a very productive starting quarterback for Oregon?
Well, he's gotten better as the year's gone on. I think early in the season, you know, he was not completing a high percentage of passes. He was missing some guys. Even though Oregon was winning, it was hard wins at the end. And some fans kind of got on him and started booing him at home. And I think right after that, he, you know, I don't know if it was the coaches that talked to him or his team that talked to him, but he changed his attitude. He changed his approach as if to say, you know what, I'm not worried about this junk. I'm just going to go play football the way I know to play football. And he gained a lot of confidence. And he's a very confident young man. He's a very aggressive young man. And you see him running the ball and not hook sliding down. And I'm not sure coaches want to do that very much, but he'll be the lead blocker on a number of plays in that read option. He'll hand it off. Running back will hesitate a little bit, and Anthony will get out and be a lead blocker. So he's got that kind of attitude. He's kind of a linebacker playing quarterback.
How many years ago did he come into the program? Because I swear I've heard his name going back a lot of years.
Yeah, well, he was here last year and finished the last half of the year. Tyler Shuck started the year, then Anthony came in and was a starter for the last probably four or five games. He came in the year before that, but did not play as a transfer. So he hasn't been around that long and hasn't had that many opportunities.
Hmm. And then before that, obviously some good opportunities going back, but has come on this year and seems to be a high-level orchestrator, makes good decisions on his keeps. At least that's the feeling I got in watching the two games that I watched. It almost feels like he – because Cam Rising, the Utah quarterback, he's got a lot of great attributes. I think one of his best attributes is his decision-making in keeps and gives on zone reads, and it feels like Brown has those same kind of – those same instincts and intuitions with the keeps and gives.
Yeah, he does, and he's better at it now than he was. I mean, there were – early in the season, there were times when he didn't pitch that ball. I mean, at the end of the Stanford game, he had C.J. Verdell walking into the end zone if he just pitches the ball, then Oregon has a lead at halftime. Instead, he keeps it and goes right into a pile and down at the 2.5 ended. So he was making some incorrect decisions early on. Like I said, something changed and his confidence levels up. And he's doing the right things, and he believes in the right things. I mean, he's got that offensive line. His running back, block really well. The tight ends block well. Right now, this offense is in a rhythm.
Definitely in a rhythm. I think that this is going to be one of those fantastic matchups. I cannot wait for it. Excited to get you in town, Jerry. I hope you come in and enjoy Salt Lake City again, and hopefully we get to meet up soon.
I always love Salt Lake City. It's one of my favorite towns, and this is always one of our favorite games. I mean, it's a knockdown dragout. It's why you play great college football matchups because it always comes down to the two best teams going against each other for all the marbles. And that's really what this is Saturday.
Well, Jerry, thanks. Take care. Stay safe. And we'll catch up with you soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Yep. There you go. Jerry Allen, play-by-play man for the Oregon Ducks. And Anthony Brown is just kind of universal. I don't think, and Lloyd, this may be a statement that's going to irritate a lot of people, but because Anthony Brown right now is the orchestrator for the number three team in the country, the two games I watched him, and I'll be fully upfront, the only two games I've really watched are Washington and Washington State. The last two they played, just to get ready for this game. And I've watched probably 2.5 quarters of the Washington game and probably close to 4 quarters of the Washington State game. In those games that I watched, I truly feel like Cam Rising's a better quarterback. I feel like Cam Rising is a better quarterback. I feel like he's more accurate downfield. I actually think that he's a stronger runner. I don't think he's as shifty, but I do think he's as strong, if not more strong, in a running game, and gives you more in the passing game. At least that's the feeling I've got. And I feel like Oregon's got better targets, at least on the outsides. I feel like Utah's got better targets on the inside with Pledger being a great drop-off artist, the three tight ends. I feel like Utah's got the advantage there. But I think that Cam Rising is a better quarterback. And I talked about Anthony Brown. It feels like he's been at Oregon forever. And he just came in as a transfer a couple of years ago. He's been in college football this is his fifth year. His first year on the field as a true freshman with Boston College, he went for nearly 1,500 yards. The following year, his sophomore year, he went well over 2,000 yards. This guy's been in college football for a lot of years. He's got tons of reps on the field. And then on the flip side, you look at Cam Rising. He's coming into his seventh or eighth start. He doesn't have a lot of starts and a lot of reps under his belt, and he's a better quarterback. And I really do feel like Utah's going to win this game coming up tomorrow. We'll talk more about it with Scotty G. We'll also talk more about it in the pregame show coming up tomorrow as we get you ready for this Utah-Oregon game. It's a big one right here in Rice-Eccles Stadium. I can't wait. It's going to be an exciting game. Take a quick break, come back to what you may have missed, and you'll also hear a familiar voice on the other side. Excited about it.
Ready. It's game week for the Utes, and the Zone Sports Network is getting you ready for kickoff. It's the biggest Pac-12 game of the year for Utah and a potential preview of the conference championship game as the Oregon Ducks come to Rice-Eccles Stadium for a showdown against the Utes. Listen all week for your chance to win tickets to the game. And then catch the Ute pregame show Saturday at 4:30 with the postgame show immediately following the game. From Monday morning to the postgame press conference, nobody brings you better coverage of Ute football.
You ready?
Yeah!
Than 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
All right, let's go.
You don't have time to watch every game or read every story. Fortunately, we do. Here's what you may have missed on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans, greetings from the campus of Coastal Carolina. It is the HTC Center. We sit courtside as we hang out with you. This is fun, man. We got Davidson and Penn playing right now. And so, yeah, we got some good college hoops going on while we do a show.
That sounds good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing really good. Appreciate you holding down the fort, man.
Doing everything I can. Looked like things went a lot better for you earlier this morning against New Mexico State, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is why college basketball is so weird, because, you know, Utah State and Penn, an Ivy League school, they go double overtime, and frankly, Penn had every opportunity to win that game. And so then they play New Mexico State, a team that dismantled Davidson yesterday and just looked like far and away the better team. And then Utah State just destroys New Mexico State. And right now, the team that Utah State nearly lost to yesterday is just getting their brakes beat off by Davidson. So it's a weird sport, man. And that's what makes it so much fun, is you just never know what's going to happen from game to game. But here we are. And it's been fun. And I'm telling you, I've never done the Myrtle Beach thing before. This place is awesome. It's really cool. Like, this is you and Amanda need to pack up and don't bring the family out here. Just you and Amanda need to come out here, because this is a great place.
It's that kind of place, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I could have seen a lot of things coming. I just didn't see Utah State keeping New Mexico State to 16 points in the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, 16-41. I saw you tweet out the first half score of that game, and I thought to myself, I don't know if Scotty's more excited about that or was more excited about overtime. I mean, what do you like? I think it would be more enjoyable to call an overtime, but what do you like, calling a blowout or an overtime?
Knowing what the outcome was like, the overtime's always a lot of fun. There's no doubt. But after some of the drama that we've seen, it was nice to have just a good old-fashioned blowout. Plus, and a lot of people don't really appreciate this, and especially even some younger Aggies, but there was such a long, heated rivalry between Utah State and New Mexico State. And so to take New Mexico State behind the woodshed and rough them up a little bit, that was kind of fun. Because that's a good team, too. I mean, they came in I think ranked in the 80s in KenPom. So that's a tier two victory. If they hold up, and they should in that conference, that'll be a game that'll be one of those tier two wins that really kind of help you out come tournament time. So that's not a bunch of schmuckatellis they were out there playing today. That was a good team.
So Utah State starts things out against UC Davis with a loss. They've put together now three wins. How are you feeling about this new coaching staff?
Pretty good. Really good, actually. And they played well, and you'll have a chance to see them probably on Sunday. Oklahoma is playing Indiana State, and so you kind of assume that Oklahoma is going to win that game. And then it'll be Utah State and Oklahoma for the championship game on Sunday, and that game will be at 1 o'clock. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that one. So anyway, what you may have missed, brought to you by Built Bar, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel, 100% real chocolate, 100% real delicious. Order yours today at built.com and save 10% if you enter zone at checkout. Hands, that is Built Bar. I need a Built Bar right now. I forgot to pack some of those.
They're the best, man. What you may have missed, we're actually just watching some of the state final stuff that's going on here. And you got Springville in a matchup with Lehigh, and Lehigh's currently up 21-6 with just a few minutes left in the third. So it looks like Lehigh might get a state championship out of this thing.
You know what? I think Rock deserves a ring for this.
He doesn't deserve nothing. He's been in wrestling practice. He's a little freshman. He doesn't even get to whiff any of that. He's not even out there the one that they're beating up on either. He's in wrestling trying to get himself better.
How's he liking wrestling, by the way?
He loves it.
Does he?
He
That's good to hear.
It's a lot of running. You know, wrestling, we would start our wrestling days with between 5 and 6 miles, and we're talking about outside mileage, 5 to 6 miles, 3 days a week. You do a lot of long-distance running in wrestling, which I know people would be like, what? But I would just ask people, lock up with somebody and wrestle for 1 minute. And see how you feel after that 1 minute.
Oh, you're done.
You're done.
Yeah.
It is because your body, all the muscles in your body work at the same time, it just fatigues you. So you've got to have huge lung capacity. So he's struggling with the running, but he loves the wrestling side of it. And he's going to be good eventually. But I'm excited for this Lehigh team. I was excited for Springville, too. Excited to see Springville get themselves to a state finals.
Well, and you got the big one tonight, isn't it? Corner Canyon and Lone Peak?
I believe that is correct, Scotty. That is a big one. Lone Peak, the only team to beat Corner Canyon, what, the last 4 years or something?
Yeah.
And Corner Canyon, an opportunity to avenge the loss, which it's always tough to beat a team twice. I wouldn't say that if Corner Canyon had beaten Lone Peak.
Yeah.
But I think Lone Peak is going to be stepping on the field. They should have some confidence and maybe some game plans that are available and maybe things that they'll work off this one in this game. But, Scotty, they didn't just beat Corner Canyon. They beat the brakes off Corner Canyon when they played them in the regular season.
Yep.
So that's going to be a really good state finals game, too. And you're right, that thing kicks off a little bit later. But
what would you say if we're setting lines on this? Corner Canyon -4 in this one?
Yeah, I think that's a good line, and I'd take the over.
Is that a little degenerate when we're setting lines on high school games?
Not at all. Not at all. Not if you know our history.
I want no part of this.
Yeah, right. Lloyd's in there. He's got his whiteboard, and he's scribbling down numbers. Why do you got three names crossed out?
I'll stop it. It's not happening.
Lloyd's got the officiating crew, every name of the officiating crew on the whiteboard.
Get your bets in now, folks.
Yeah. Hey, Scotty, I came across a story yesterday. Did you see the Texas Tech broadcasting crew that got thrown on suspension?
How about that? This actually makes me nervous because sometimes
I
may say a
thing. I said I'm a little worried for my buddy. And I don't know if the Mount West Conference carries the same stick that the Big 12 carries, but yeah, they put these guys on suspension. They're out for a game.
Can
and
you believe that?
Yeah,
suspended for a whole game because of quite now. Now, like, I heard their call at the end with the field goal, which was crazy. I don't know if you heard that guy. He sounded like, who was that?
Did.
Who was that presidential candidate, Lloyd? We're going to go to
Delaware. Oh, John Kerry?
Like, it sounded like that guy. But I didn't hear them and what they were saying about the officials. Did you guys get any audio on that?
We didn't get the audio, but I went through all of the this transcript.
Howard Dean. That's it.
Yeah, I went through all the transcripts on it.
Not Superman. It wasn't Dean Cain. No.
Jimmy Dean?
Those sausages.
Went through all the transcripts. Essentially, they wanted a turnover reviewed.
Yeah.
And there was no review, and it did show on a still picture the tight end's knee was down in the end zone, and he had the ball. And that's what caused them to flip out. And then they named every official on the field and shamed them and said that the Big 12 needs to do something about it. They were out of their minds. But the first thing I thought was, oh, man, oh, my buddy never gets caught into something like that.
Oh, man. It makes me a little gun-shy. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. It
can't be losing those game checks.
Just don't go after the officials. Hey, by the way, is everything good with Kevin White, your color analyst on the Utah State football broadcast?
Oh, no, he's not happy.
Yeah, what you guys did was uncalled for.
He's not happy at Lloyd, right? He's not happy at Lloyd.
It's mostly at Lloyd.
No, yeah, right. I got his back. I got Kevin's back.
You did not get his back.
I did not have his back.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
No, your quote was, I hate it when guys do this, whether it's a no-hitter or at the free throw line. You just can't do that, Kevin. You just can't do it.
Yeah, you did say you just can't do it twice.
I'll have to go listen back to the tape. I don't remember that.
No, you were really aggressive. And I was the one who said that I actually apologized to Kevin. You guys, neither one of you apologized to him, and you ran him through the ringer pretty good to the point where his wife listened to it.
No.
And she felt horrible about it, too. Actually, I think he said that she thought it was really funny.
Oh, we love Kevin. I just maybe that's the way you go from now on. He mentioned, you know, what this kicker had done to that point, and the guy knocks it through. Maybe now he goes, hey, he's 7-7 right before he kicks it.
Hey, yeah, maybe that's the reverse jinx. I will say we had a little conference meeting with Jeremiah Jensen.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about that, and I said, well, Jeremiah, he said right before the kick, he went 7-7, and Jeremiah's like, no, he didn't. Did he? You can't do that, Kevin. And he gave him a talking
he admonished
to as well.
Him.
Yeah.
Oh,
and Kevin's
man,
like, wow,
poor Kevin.
Now I'm really getting piled on.
Oh, we love him. Kevin, we love you. We wouldn't tease you if we didn't love you.
It's all out of love. It's all about just getting better. Just some good quality feedback.
That's all it is.
All right. Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We'll kick off your 1 o'clock hour next right here on The Zone Sports Network.